The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Whole Health Cure podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist. On this podcast, we explore the science and provide inspiration and skills for living your happiest, most fulfilling, and healthiest life. Our guest today is Dr. Stefan Esser, and we'll be talking about the intersection between nutrition and your muscles and joints. Dr. Esser is a sports and spine physician in Jacksonville, Florida. He completed his medical school at the University of South Florida, his residency at Harvard Medical School, and sports fellowship at Mayo Clinic. He's a fourth-generation plant-based eater and loves to share the message of health through regular presentations, in-person seminars, and online offerings at esserhealth.com or on Instagram and Facebook at esserhealth. And he knows a lot about nutrition and sports because prior to his career in medicine, he was ranked number one in the U.S. in men's open doubles tennis. Dr. Esser, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
And boy, that's quite an accomplishment. Number one in the U.S. in men's open doubles tennis. So that's a lot of years and dedication as an athlete. Do you still play?
I do. Once it's in your blood like that, it's hard to ever shake it out.
I could imagine. And so for a lot of years as an athlete, you probably paid a lot of attention to just how to perform your best, you know, eating right, the right workouts, et cetera.
Absolutely. To be able to perform at a high level, the basic foundation of your health is absolutely essential. And so not only, the excellent nutrition, excellent hydration, good sleep, as well as the overall fitness and performance aspect of it. So, it's kind of reflective of, how each of us should perceive our lives, though. It's just we see in the microcosm really focused for the athlete that they focus on all the different aspects of their life to get their maximum performance. But it translates to just daily life, even for the average Joe or Jane, that we want to look at all those aspects and say, are we maximizing our own health in every way that we can?
Yeah, that's so well put. I think, as an athlete, you're put in the position where, even a second matters. So these components that go into just optimal performance make all the difference. And if we all lived our lives even, to some degree like that, I think, we could not only function better, but just feel better. In all your years of training, how did you find that these components of lifestyle affected your performance? Like, what was the most impactful and what were the types of things you did?
Well, there were probably three or four parts to that. There's no replacement for hard work and dedication when it comes to sport, kind of in your field or in the gym or in the recovery zone. There's no doubt about that. So, the hard work that was put in the gym with training and exercise, the hard work in the case of tennis spent on the court striking the ball, thousands and thousands of times until that hand-eye coordination was just right and perfect at the moment of contact with the ball. But then the other aspects, the mind-body piece that's so essential for performance and for life in general. And when I think mind-body, I think not only of the people think about transcendental meditation or the rest, but really just kind of the day-to-day stuff, the mundane things like, are you getting enough sleep? And that sleep allowing you to perform at a higher and more acute and focused level, and work harder and longer on the court. And then, of course, nutrition, are you getting adequate micronutrients? Are you getting adequate macronutrients? Are you fueling your body so that it can perform at peak? So, I think it was just like with all things, a bit of experimentation along the way to identify what works best for the body to allow it to perform at the most elite level. And then recovery, to maximize that recovery period. Again, the same thing, the sleep, the hydration, the nutrition. And really that's where, when you look at the data and the literature, the plant-based approach to eating is becoming so powerful for so many athletes, in particular with recovery that we're seeing and performance, that the more of these phytonutrient, these micronutrient-rich foods, the deep purples, blues, and reds, you know, the tart cherry juice, the beet juice, the blueberries, the more of this we eat, the more our cells are able to recover more quickly.
And I want to, you know, get back around to that and ask you more about the specifics of what you eat. But you'd mentioned you're fourth generation plant-based eater. So did this kind of come natural to you? Is this something that your family had done for years?
Yes, my great-grandfather started, due to health issues that he had back in the 1920s, actually, beginning to eat largely plant-based. And as a result, my grandfather ended up becoming a naturopath and chiropractor at the New York College of Naturopathy in the 1930s, and ended up then practicing lifestyle medicine, 10-acre health ranch in South Florida called Esser's Ranch that he ran for 65 years. And 30 patients at a time would stay on the ranch and reverse disease. Over 30,000 patients cataloged in his career. And he ran the place into his 90s. And it was really amazing to grow up in that environment because disease was really not a common thing in our family for many, many years. And in addition to that, you know, common little simple things would just melt away when patients would come and stay at the ranch, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes, things of that kind. And so it's beautiful to grow up in that environment because just it was so simple, really, because everybody in our family ate that way, ate well. It was beautiful to kind of be raised that way. It made it very simple for us.
And he sounds like quite a pioneer, you know, to be so ahead of his time to start such a program. I know they're growing in popularity now. And so combining, you know, your, you know, years of time in, you know, in athletics, as well as just the strong, rich heritage in your family, sports medicine just seems like it was a perfect fit for you. And when you practice sports medicine, so you have a practice right now where you implement a lot of the things that you've learned to your patients to optimize their performance and to help with their quality of life. What are the types of orthopedic problems that you see?
So I see everything from the top of the head to the bottom of the toes, really everything from back pain, neck pain, shoulder pain, headaches, hand pain, knee pain, you know, everything from arthritis to, you know, rotator cuff tears to, you know, tendon injuries of various kinds to ligament sprains, you name it, we see it. And I love variety, so that keeps my whole day always varied. And, you know, and what we find is that there is this intersection between orthopedics and excellent nutrition and movement, between, you know, lifestyle medicine, the basic facets of lifestyle medicine. So every patient, imagine this patient walks in, a 45-year-old lady who, let's say, is overweight with some borderline diabetes and some hypertension, and she comes in with knee pain. Well, you know, if we just focus only on the knee, we're missing a huge opportunity to address her symptoms in a way that gives her long-term health and improves her overall quality of life and function. So what I try to do is integrate everything together in a comprehensive fashion. So we may do the standard care with the knee as far as orthopedics, whether it be physical therapy, various injections, regenerative medicine with platelet-rich plasma or stem cells, or whatever it might be. But I'm also going to get in there and try to chat about and incorporate lifestyle interventions, whether it be you know, plant-based, you know, 4-week nutritional detoxification with weight loss, with reduction of inflammation. And by bringing the pieces of the puzzle together, it's so amazing to see how healthy the body can be in even short periods of time.
And the pieces of the puzzle, let's talk about that a little bit more. So when you see this person who, you know, of course, has the high blood pressure, all these inflammatory conditions, what are the specific ways that, you know, if say we have a listener who may be in that similar situation, what are specifics that can be done?
Well, and I just backstep one moment and just say the first thing is identifying, are you ready to change, to that listener, right? Are you ready to take on this exciting new adventure of getting healthy? And if you're ready, the tools are there and the physicians, you know, you just have to reach out to the right people. And so, you know, to get healthier and to achieve that maximum benefit, we stop and we go, okay, is this person, like you said, chronically inflamed? If they've got those cardiometabolic diseases, things like high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, things like that, they have chronic inflammation at the cellular level. We need to bring down that inflammation because pain the basics of pain is inflammation, and degeneration of a joint is related to that chronic inflammation. So we used to think, for example, if you carry extra weight, that your knees and hips and ankles wear out just because of the weight. That is a part of it, because a pound above the waist is anywhere from 3 to 10 below the waist. And so if you lose those pounds, yes, you reduce the forces. But the newer studies also show that our abdominal fat, for example, the fat we carry in our midriff, that fat is hormonally active, and it's releasing hormones that actually go into our cells of our knees, for example, and damage the cartilage. They're called cytokines. That's the term. These are pro-inflammatory molecules that damage our cartilage. So we want the factory that's producing all that to go away, and that's the belly fat. And so beginning to increase our consumption of the fruits and the vegetables and the simple, minimally processed whole grains, we begin to immediately see a reduction in inflammation and a progressive reduction in weight. So it's a win-win for the joints, and everybody gets happier.
Which is wonderful. And to reduce inflammation, so there are two parts of this in the dietary standpoint. So one, as you mentioned, are the foods that can reduce inflammation. And then there's another bucket is what foods cause inflammation. So what foods should people avoid?
Yeah, so I tell people the most basic element of inflammation we often talk about as physicians are a little molecule called prostaglandins. And so prostaglandins, many people don't realize it, when they take an ibuprofen, Motrin, Aleve, any anti-inflammatory, they're actually blocking the production of prostaglandins, these little molecules that irritate our tissues. And so the number one source of the molecule that ends up turning into prostaglandins actually comes from processed foods, meat and dairy. So meat and dairy and processed foods are a source of something called arachidonic acids. Want your listeners to go look that up, right? Arachidonic acid. And that molecule is broken down to form prostaglandins. So when you take that molecule out of your diet, when you take arachidonic acid out of your diet, immediately you're decreasing all of these inflammatory molecules that would otherwise be produced. So yes, you bring in all the anti-inflammatory foods, the things like the berries, the greens, the fresh fruits. Because I also say, you notice when you cut an apple, it turns brown. And it's turning brown because it's absorbing the free radicals, the inflammation from the air. So when you eat that same apple, it absorbs your free radicals. So you want to be filling your plate with the rainbow, as I like to say. You want to fill your plate with color of bright, fresh, live foods, and reduce the amount of the dead foods, the processed, heavily processed things that added meat, added sugars and salts and fats, and then reduce the amount of the meat that you're consuming or eliminate it completely, depending upon your goals.
And what you just described works in so many ways. There's the reduction in the prostaglandins by avoiding the meat and dairy, and the fats that are in the meat and the dairy also are the ones that contribute to the belly fat, which also triggers inflammation. And so it's amazing how there's so many pathways where the dietary components are the same, but the impact it's having works in such, you know, a complex way inside the body.
And that's what I love, because people come back to see me and they have, you know, these testimonies that they write for us, and it'll be like, well, I came to see Dr. Esser for my knee pain, but now I got off my diabetes meds, off my blood pressure meds, I've lost 22 pounds, and yeah, I don't have knee pain either, right? So it's kind of like it reframes in such a beautiful way that everything's improving, right? Oh, and I have better bowel movements, and I'm sleeping better, you know, and some of my psoriasis has improved. And it's just, it gets back to the foundation that health comes from healthy living for all of us. And so if you're putting kerosene in your car, and it's not meant for kerosene, all kinds of things fall apart, whether it's the fuel filter, whether it's the seals, whatever it might be. But if you're putting that high test fuel, that excellent quality fuel in, the vehicle performs better, the engine rah, gives that nice sound to it, and it's healthy. And that's what we're looking for our own bodies. Yeah.
Right. And so these types of anti-inflammatory foods, of course, are very helpful in people that have inflammatory conditions, as you mentioned, such as osteoarthritis. And for people who want to improve their performance, as you mentioned, there's the nutrition during recovery. What do you recommend for people who work out and during recovery want to optimize their muscle building?
Well, I think the literature supports the use of a combined approach there. So for the person who truly, so I always separate people out into two areas. One is going to be the individual who has cardiometabolic disease, like we said, the blood pressure issues, the diabetes, carrying extra weight, et cetera. And if they're exercising because they want to lose weight, reduce their risk of various diseases, then their nutritional sort of intake should be different. And let's say the person who is a high level recreational or an elite athlete who's wanting to gain muscle mass or the like, or let's say an older lady in her late 60s, 70s, 80s, who has got a loss of muscle mass. We call that sarcopenia, right? The loss of muscle mass and who's wanting to put muscle back on. So two different groups of people. So I'd encourage our listeners here to think about, am I in the group wanting to lose weight, get off blood pressure meds, reduce disease, or am I in the group wanting to gain muscle mass and strength? And so they're not mutually exclusive, but there is some variability there. So the person who's wanting to lose weight, I would encourage just to eat standard healthy food, you know, as kind of, you know, their appetite kind of, you know, directs them. But the person who's wanting to gain muscle mass, we might be a little more sort of focused and say, all right, well, maybe we try to shoot for that 30 grams of carbohydrate right after a workout, along with some lean protein of 10 or 15 grams at that time, to that the muscles can grab onto and store and begin to incorporate more quickly into their muscles itself. So, you know, but that's simply gained with, you know, that peanut butter banana sandwich after a workout, or a handful of raisins and a few almonds and an apple, right? So it doesn't necessarily need to be in a processed form or in a, you know, processed protein powder or things of that kind. So looking at our total calorie balance, and then looking at the micronutrient balance, and then looking at our personal goals, is what's going to be important for people to track.
Yeah, that's really a good point. And the nutritional component is one aspect of lifestyle. And you'd mentioned sleep. What are the other aspects that you encourage your patients to do?
We talk about excellent nutrition, clean water, exercise as medicine, of course, sleep, emotional poise, and a little bit of sunlight exposure. And then, of course, finally, the avoidance of toxins. So those basic seven tenets of health is what we speak about, because there are parts in your life you won't be able to be in control of your sleep. Like when you and I were in residency, perhaps we weren't in control of our sleep patterns. We were up late hours and early mornings. Or if you're a new parent with a young child, your sleep is disrupted. But during that time, it's essential you focus on the aspects of your health you can. And that is the food you eat, perhaps, right? That is the exercise that you get, whether it be 10 minutes or more, and the like. So we want to feed each of those aspects of ourselves. So, you know, in the athletic world, the mental health component is crucial. If you're dealing with a lot of emotional chaos in your life, a broken family situation, ongoing chaos with a, you know, significant other, it distracts from your ability to perform well on the field or on the court. Versus if you come from a place where things are supportive and nurturing, often you're able to perform better. That's the same in our day-to-day lives, right? So if we're going to work and we're so broken inside, how are we going to be able to address what's before us, you know, at the workplace? So making sure that our relationships are healthy and that we are working to heal them is so essential. And then our own internal emotional poise, how do we cope with and strategize and deal with day-to-day things? So identifying, you know, a topic I like is emotional intelligence, right? How are we emotionally? Are we able to identify our strengths and our weaknesses and our way of coping, et cetera? So crucial. You know, the sleep piece you mentioned, obviously during sleep, our body rejuvenates. It heals. It addresses underlying issues. And it's so essential that we get that sleep anywhere from 6 to 12 hours per night so that we wake rested and are ready for a new day.
And you also mentioned toxins. Of course, there's so many built into our environment. How do you encourage people to avoid toxins?
Well, the more we can move in the direction of the consuming organic foods, especially when it comes to the Dirty Dozen, that from our food perspective can reduce the risk. Certainly, if you go fully plant-based, you are already radically reducing your toxic exposure, because meat and dairy, very heavily high quantities of kind of toxins that are incorporated into the muscles of the animals or into the dairy of the cow. Number next, of course, the most basic toxins. If you still smoke, you know, and 25% or so of the population still does, depending upon which areas of the country we're in, 18 to 20 something, is really reach out for help. You can be successful. We've got to get that out of your life. And a lot of people, unfortunately, don't like to hear this, but alcohol is a major toxin. It is a neurocellular toxin, and it really has no place in our lives. Or if it does, in tiny little amounts at celebratory moments, like the glass of champagne at the wedding or the like. But all the studies are relatively clear at this point. The CDC is clear on that. It increases the risk of breast cancer, esophageal cancer, gastric cancer, potentially pancreatic, even colon, et cetera. So we really need to be honest about what the literature shows, even if it makes us uncomfortable. And so alcohol really should be minimized or eliminated. So all of these basic toxins, where and when we can, reducing the use of plastics in our home, using more glass, stainless steel, this is all essential to reduce our risk, in particular, of various cancers. Because a healthy lifestyle, if you look at the EPIC trial, a fun trial done in Europe for your listeners, that followed people over an extended period of time, the reduction, if you ate healthy food, exercised every day, didn't smoke, kept your body mass index below obesity levels, your risk of diabetes, heart disease, strokes, et cetera, was reduced by 80 to 90%. Your risk of cancer was reduced by 30% with those simple measures. And I think that speaks to the fact that, there are a lot of toxins in our environment that are hard to eliminate. And so we need to all keep working to reduce those.
Right. Now, that's such a good reminder of how much we can control in terms of our environment. And now, how about pain management when it comes to sports? So I have a lot of patients, as I'm sure you do, that have so much pain from their underlying arthritis that it's hard for them to just get started on a good exercise routine. How effective do you find that making nutritional and certain targeted exercises are for pain management?
So it depends on the area of arthritis, whether it be, let's say, the shoulder joint or the knee joint or the hip joint. But on average, if a person goes on an anti-inflammatory plant-based approach for about 4 weeks, on average, their arthritic pain is reduced by 30 to 90%, dependent upon their genetic response and the extent of the arthritis. That's number one. And we know, of course, that occurs, as we spoke of, reducing the prostaglandin production, improving blood flow, which we didn't talk about. But as you eat more deep purple, red, all these bright, colorful fruits, berries, vegetables, they actually dilate your blood vessels, which improves blood flow to your joint. So imagine if your joint is very inflamed and irritable, but it's not getting oxygen. It's not getting the micronutrients it needs to heal. Well, every time you eat that McDonald's, Burger King, fried food, trans fat, all the rest, it inhibits blood flow to your joint. But when you eat the bright, colorful berries, fruits, et cetera, it actually dilates your blood vessels. So we get oxygen, we get fresh nutrients into the joint. So a plant-based approach reduces in 4 weeks, 30 to 90% on average, the pain. But then we need to, and exercise is also equally effective for depending upon the type of arthritis. So for example, in the knee arthritis, you get a person doing lateral hip exercises and quad exercises, they can get a reduction of pain of around 30 to 60% with that just by changing the biomechanics. Because pain has three real major areas, right? One is anatomy in the body. So if you fracture your bone, don't give me, green vegetables, fix my bone, right? Right. But anatomy is one part. The next is biomechanics. So how strong our muscles are, how well balanced they are. And the third is cellular inflammation. So the food takes care of a lot of the cellular inflammation. And then you might add to that supplements. So for example, turmeric at 1500 milligrams has been shown as effective as ibuprofen, right? At a high dose at 600 to 800 milligrams, once to twice per day. So we'd rather have people use the spices like turmeric or boswellia, ginger. These have all been shown in studies to be as effective as the anti-inflammatories so many people use, but with fewer side effects. So I start people healthy nutrition, begin some supplementation, the use of various injections if needed, whether they be gel shots, whether they be prolotherapy, whether it be platelet-rich plasma or other regenerative medicine injections, and possibly steroid where needed, or whether we do nerve blocks to help reduce their pain short-term, different nerve freezing techniques that we can use. And we kind of put all the pieces of the puzzle together.
And which is just wonderful. And do you find that it's hard for people to manage the pain in the short term to get the longer term? I know I have a lot of patients that will start a workout routine will have pain after they do their exercises and feel that they're hurting their joint. Is there a way you recommend working through that?
Direction is the first thing. So if the patient is going out and exercising on their own, let's use the example of knee pain, which is so common, knee arthritis. The last thing I want somebody to do is go start exercising, doing squats, lunges, impact activities of any kind. You're correct. It'll probably hurt the knee more, then they'll come back and say, well, I couldn't exercise. Thus, I went and ate more comfort food. I put on another 20 pounds and now my knee hurts even more. So what I say to people is I don't want you to, so we either get them to a physical therapist to teach specific exercises, or I get them in a pool doing aquatic therapies, or even simple home exercises where you're working more on the side of the leg instead of the front without loading the knee and doing some upper body exercise. But in that moment, for me, the first step is reduce inflammation. So if they're so inflamed that they're saying, ah, I can't do anything, it hurts so much, I want to get them on the healthy nutrition approach, reduce their generalized inflammation and drop some weight if that's an issue for them, and then move to increasing amounts of exercise. So it's a graded approach in that case.
Which is great. And for our listeners who are looking to manage their joint health long-term from a preventive standpoint and want to be lifelong, people who are able to exercise well into their later years, you know, to preserve their knees, preserve their shoulders, et cetera. Are there some best exercises or good, better routines that you would recommend for people?
Cross training, I think, is an excellent thing to keep in mind. So let's say you love playing tennis or you love running, that's your favorite thing. I'd encourage you to make sure you have something that's doing different, working different muscles in different ways than that particular sport. Let's use the example of running, impact, repetitive, moving just forward on average. So what I'd love to see people doing in that case is to do a non-impact exercise that works more of the outer sides of the hips, the back of the shoulders, etc. And that might be something like Pilates. Right? Non-impact, working the lateral hips. It may be some swimming, no impact, working the full body, still getting the cardiovascular benefit. So we want to be balancing strength building with cardiovascular and with balance and coordination. So you're looking, say, okay, well, if I run all the time and I love this, well, that's not doing a lot of strength training, nor is it doing a lot of balance work, nor flexibility. So where am I going to get my flexibility, my balance work, and then my strength training? And so try to meet each of those areas. So for example, maybe you're going to start standing on one foot while you brush your teeth. That's a good beginning to work on a little bit of balance, right? And then build, maybe you're going to start doing some Tai Chi. Maybe you're going to start doing some line dancing where you're changing directions and rotating and turning as you go into older age. These are valuable things to think about. Where is the area of weakness and how can I improve on that area? That's it. Number one is cross training. Number two is making sure if you're really working out at a high level of intensity that you have adequate recovery days. I see patients every day, especially during the running season here in Florida, coming in with stress injuries where they get swelling in the bones of their legs and have to stop for extended periods. And usually it's because they violated the twos. They went too far, too fast, too soon. So they kind of, let's say, built up their mileage or their speed and never gave enough recovery time. So make sure you have a day or so that, during the week that you're giving yourself a little bit of a break. You're just maybe doing some stretching and flexibility work, working on the mind-body connection instead of just a fitness on that day. So, and then as we spoke of already, the excellent nutrition. I mean, we need to keep our joints healthy, and in order for them to be healthy, they need excellent nutrition. So those micronutrient-rich foods are so essential, just as you said, also avoiding the other foods.
And that's such great advice. And for people who want to cross train and want to supplement what they're doing, say if they're a runner, do you recommend that they work with a personal trainer or just pick a handful of exercises on their own? How would you recommend for people to get into a really good routine?
If you are, so the example of the runner, let's say, who wants to be running half marathons for decades to come, let's say, I think it's absolutely essential they should see a physical therapist who's running specialized, who puts them on a treadmill with video cameras around, looks at their form, their technique, and evaluates whether there are areas that could be improved, that may be setting them up for possible injury, looking at the ankle, looking at the hip, as well as at the knee, and say, no, there's some areas right here, here, here. We can improve on these to help you be healthier more long-term. The same with our tennis athletes. So I teach a course every once in a while. I just was teaching one at Mayo on functional screens, where you know the athlete can be screened on, are there specific tight areas or weak areas around the body that may increase their risk of injury? So these functional movement screens being screened and evaluated for that. If a patient feels, if an individual feels, well, I've been exercising my whole life. I've been, you know, in the sporting teams. I've been in the gym, et cetera. If they have good knowledge of the body and how to move it well in space, then I'm fine with them, you know, doing some research and reading and, you know, doing it on their own. If, however, they're a little unsure, then seeing a good, well-respected personal trainer in their area or an excellent physical therapist in the area to guide them in beginning a program would probably be the best.
Yeah, it's great to know the resources that are available and to have people, you know, have those as options to work with if they're not comfortable on their own. Dr. Esser, thank you so much. This has been so helpful, just making that connection between lifestyle, specifically nutrition, with joint health, both, you know, from a quality of life disease management standpoint, as well as for athletes who want to optimally perform. Before we leave, are there any final thoughts that you want to share with our listeners?
You know, I guess the one thing I always want to share with everybody out there is just never forget how powerful you are. Because sometimes, you know, life, the world, what you're going through, et cetera, can be very overwhelming and make you feel like you just can't do it or like life's spinning out of control. When you begin to have a diagnosis of pain in an area or a degeneration area, et cetera. And it's just, I want to just encourage you that you are powerful and don't let somebody steal through the words they say or things they say to you, you know, that you're not powerful. Don't let them convince you of that. So make sure that every day you wake up and you recognize and remember that as you're breathing, as you're eating, as you're moving, as you're stretching, as you're thinking, these are all ways that you're influencing your health and that you can be very powerful in your health. So make sure that every day you're making decisions that reinforce how you want to feel. Now, and you can do it. And I just want to say thank you to you, Sharon, for inviting me on the show and letting me share my passion for health with you and with your listeners. And thank you for all that you do to kind of touch lives for good. So thank you for that.
And thank you for being powerful in the lives that you've touched and the difference that you've made and for joining us today. So thank you.
Absolutely.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by Emory Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website, emoryhealthcare.org/livewell. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.